Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual, culture, and creative community. My name is Malika Fryer-Martin, standing in for your regular host, Amanda Coulson, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can take us with you when you're on the move or traveling in foreign lands by live streaming us at www.guardiantalkradio.com. You can also go to the app or Play Store and download TuneIn Radio to listen to us. Tonight in the studio with me is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful artist. She's a writer. She does these beautiful prints. If you've had the opportunity to visit our current featured exhibition, which will soon be closing, We Suffer to Remain, you'll see a fantastic work by her, but I haven't said her name yet, so perhaps I should go ahead and do that. Miss Sonia Farmer, welcome back.
Yes, thank you for having me again. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, no, it's an honor and a pleasure, and I'm so glad to have you with me. It's the first time that I've had the opportunity to sort of have this conversation. I know you and Amanda have spoken a few times on the show, so I just want listeners to have an opportunity to hear just a little bit from you about your background, and then how you sort of developed as an artist. And so we'll just sort of have the conversation. But if we kick off, obviously you're from the Bahamas, so we can start right there.
Yeah, sure. So yes, I am a Bahamian writer and artist, and my work uses sort of elements of book arts, and by that I mean binding books by hand, letterpress printing, which is printing using an old movable type press, handmade paper, even calligraphy now I'm learning, which is very exciting.
Oh, wow.
But also digital platforms, digital book design, and then certain website design. And I use all of these methods to sort of create narratives about the Caribbean space.
Okay.
I'm really interested in, as an artist and a writer, creating narratives that sort of resist the problematic narrative of paradise. So I think whatever I do almost always tries to find other narratives within existing narratives to sort of counteract that.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about that. The idea of finding a counter-narrative inside the larger narrative or the mainstream narrative.
Yes. So I guess I can use the piece that is up in We Suffer to Remain right now as an example. My piece is called A True and Exact History. And that piece is, at its core, it's an erasure. It's a poetic erasure.
Okay. Now, for folks that don't
know that is,
much
of
it. Yes.
So it's a poetic erasure of a book, a historical Caribbean book from 1657 by Richard Ligon, called A True and Exact History of the Island of Barbados. And
I'm sure very true and exact.
Yes, it's really not, which is what makes it so interesting.
Right.
And so what I mean by erasure is I cull words from existing bodies of text in order to make a new narrative out of that text. So I remove some words and keep others, and I make sort of a new narrative, sentence by sentence, line by line.
Okay.
So, you know, Ligon's book is... it is a slim historical volume, and I say historical loosely, but and the poem is much shorter than the book, you know?
Right.
But the idea is that I'm using his words, existing words, to create a new narrative to sort of think about what it means to, in his words, write a true and exact history of anything. So erasure is a pretty subversive practice.
Sure.
I also use other methods to create work. So, for example, right now I am in a writing residency at The Current at Bahamar.
Congrats to you.
Thank you. It's been a really wonderful summer being sort of coming back home to them, because I worked at Bahamar during 2014, 2015. I was there during the debt crisis. That was an interesting time.
I can imagine.
Yes, and I have since gone off to graduate school, and they have reopened with a new team at The Current, but it still feels like the core values are still there that that I helped to build as part of the original team. So it's been really wonderful to be back in that space. I mean, there are a lot of complex emotions, right?
Sure.
But at its core, I'm glad to have this kind of closure. And the piece that I'm working on there, I'm working on a couple of different projects, but
okay.
The piece I'm working on now is something called The Best Estimation in the World. And it's...
That's an interesting title.
Yes. And if you think about it for a little minute, you might realize that it's almost like the best destination in the world, but destination has been changed to estimation.
Okay.
And I'm sort of examining the history and current reality of our culture of service, our tourism culture, in the Bahamas, but I mean in the wider Caribbean, but especially here in the Bahamas, where it's our like number one industry.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and there is a lot of complexity that comes with that, right?
Indeed.
Yes, and so the poems are using these transcripts that I have from interviews with people in the service industry.
Okay.
These interviews were put through a voice recognition software, which I don't know if you've ever used those, but the software, it doesn't work very well unless you train it for your one voice, you know, and if you put through a variety of like accents and intonations and just different levels of pitch and things like that, the program tries to make a written transcript out of the recording, but it doesn't go very well, so it approximates a lot of words, and that's when you get things like, instead of destination, estimation, or some other very strange combinations.
Okay.
It's really beautiful. So this is my raw material to make poems out of.
Also becomes a bit of an estimation as well, right?
Yes, it does, exactly. Yeah.
Of the intention of the speaker.
Yes, so it's like a dual reference in that title. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm making like sort of about 20 poems with these transcripts, and the poems come through building these very like strange narratives about service culture here in the Bahamas. And I think I'm hoping that these poems become a lens for us to examine what that means for us here in the Bahamas. So that's what I'm working on. So that's another example of like an experimental sort of writing practice that I have.
And even when
I do write narrative poetry, let's say poetry, quote unquote, from scratch, on my own, then, which I'm less and less interested in doing.
Really?
Yeah, I'm more interested in finding these other ways to cull, you know, words from existing narratives or pieces of text in order to sort of subvert them a little bit and make us question things. But my poetry collection, Infidelities, which came out last year, and I had my launch a year ago at the National Art Gallery.
Yes, at the NAGB, right.
It was such a lovely launch, such a great evening. Those are poems that examine the mythology around the female pirate Anne Bonny. So even when I am writing my own narrative poetry, I'm still interested in sort of like trying to get to the core of these narratives that we just allow to sort of exist and be perpetuated without questioning them.
Okay.
Yeah. So
is there something to the idea of what it is that you're writing or imagining being grounded in something else that draws you to it?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I think growing up, you know, here in the Bahamas, I'm sort of interested in interrogating what it means to be Bahamian or what it means to be from the Caribbean space and have that identity. And I think that there are a lot of problematic myths right surrounding this place through our history. And I want to get to the core of that through my work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in terms of writing, right, and using words and creating and developing print and doing it in this way that's actually like quite historical. I mean, in a sense, it's almost a lost art. You know, when you think about papermaking and just the skill sets required to do something along those lines. What made you decide to go, you know, to use that avenue?
Yeah.
Because there's so many ways to, you know, to tell a story, if you will. And in this way, it's literal, but then also quite abstract.
Yes. I like I said earlier, I do use the crafts of book arts, and so, and I am in a master's program at the University of Iowa Center for the Book in Iowa City to get very, very good and well trained in these crafts, which include binding books by hand, letterpress printing, calligraphy, and handmade paper. So I'm training with the best so that I can come back and.
But what
do
inspired you to do that?
Yeah, so I think. I am a little bit of a Luddite.
Okay.
So I think that is part of it. Okay. I have always found computers a little bit difficult and technology a little bit difficult, although the irony is I'm using it more and more now. I'm using sort of programs for digital humanities projects now, too.
Okay.
But
we can't escape it.
You can't escape it. I mean, we use a lot of digital practices within letterpress printing now, for example, too. I mean, it just makes it better, you know. So I've been forced to sort of reckon and re-examine that anyway. However, I've always been a visual artist as well as a writer. Just through all my childhood, I loved drawing and I loved writing and creating stories. And
sure.
I think that book arts as a field offers a chance for these two things to really come together, you know,
okay.
because you have a literary component and mm-hmm. a visual component. And through the visual component, you're creating a narrative through the book form. And I love books. I've always loved books. And it's just been like ravenous as a child, just like my parents were wonderful and they always bought me books, what kind of books I wanted.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Little's Pet Shop and stuff, like whatever, no, but books. Yeah, here's a bunch of books. So I was ravenous. I read and read and read, and I still do read, probably not as much, but you know.
No. Adulting gets in the way.
Right, adulting gets in the way. And I think like the form of the book is just such a special form to be working in as well.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
the work itself is lovely.
I
mean, even just the feel of the paper. And I think about things like that.
Yes.
As someone growing up who was an avid reader, and mm-hmm. when people suggest an e-reader to me, it's almost impossible for me to quite comprehend it. I have to be able to touch paper.
I agree.
Have to be able to turn the page.
I had an e-reader for a little while, just because I felt that it was hard to get, you know, newly released books that I was interested in here in the Bahamas.
Yes.
And so the e-reader was helpful in that way, but it was...
No, that's very true.
Tough. Yeah, it was still tough for me to, like, you know, and, you know, this is a whole other conversation, but I think e-books aren't even really... We haven't figured out what the form of the e-book is yet, I don't think, personally, because it's trying too much to be, like, a real book. When in fact, I think we really need to imagine, like, what does the digital book look like? And it's not that. And the reason we know it's not that is because it's not succeeding. You know, there was a moment, I feel like, in 2008 where people were sort of freaking out about ebooks are going to replace everything. But now it turns out print culture has exploded even more.
Yeah, there's this whole resurgence.
Yes. And so part of that, I think, is because the book as a symbol, I don't think will ever go away.
No.
Print is a very powerful thing, and it has fundamentally changed our society, and it will continue to do so. And ebooks offer a great alternative for a variety of reasons, but they're still not a great experience of reading. I read Claudia Rankine's Citizen as an ebook. That was a mistake. That book deserves to be physical, like physically read, because of the way that the poems are structured and the way that she incorporates imagery into the poems. That doesn't come through in the ebook at all. And it's too bad. It takes away from the experience.
It's interesting that you utilized like one book in particular. But I was speaking with someone. We were at dinner, and they were referencing. Oh gosh, I'm going to totally mess up the title of this book.
That's okay.
A
Half Yellow Sun.
Yes. Ha ha ha! I didn't totally mess it up.
I think that is what it's called.
Yes.
I haven't read it. I've just heard the title. I'm not sure.
And it's, you know, it's based around Nigerian Civil War and two sisters, and you know, really it's an amazing book. But we were just having a conversation around this idea of when you are utilizing the electronic component, and that's not to say that it doesn't have validity and that it isn't useful, but what happens when you want to read something again?
Yeah.
When you want to go back to that very same spot, when you want to be able to reference something with exactitude that you recall from another moment. And there is something to that tactile motion, that sense of familiarity, that ability to dog ear, at least if it's your book. If it's a library book, don't dog ear.
Right, don't dog ear. But I know all of my, I'm a book heathen, I dog ear, I write in my books, everything. Yeah, yeah.
As many do. And there's this personal relationship that you sort of develop
with the physical object. There's
absolutely
something about the physicality of a book that is just, I think it's a very beautiful thing to me as an artist. And I think that's why I became interested in this field. I mean, I went to school. I went to Pratt Institute for my undergraduate BFA in writing, and that was a focus. My thesis was on poetry.
Okay.
But we were able to take a variety of art classes as well, because Pratt Institute is primarily an arts college.
Indeed.
Yeah, and I took this class called The Art of the Book with Miriam Scher. And I was, you know, I had heard, like, you make some books in this class. And I'm like, make a book? That sounds kind of crazy, but I am interested in that, because as a writer, you know, there's this whole, or obviously there's a whole desire to publish your work, right?
And
the publishing field is precarious, man, like, and it's huge, and there's a lot of steps, and there's a lot of gatekeepers.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, and I think, like, sometimes writers, you know, sometimes we get lucky, we get wonderful agents and great publishers who respect our work, and but then other times we just don't. And because publishing is about money, mostly these large publishing houses are really
sure.
about money, right? And so I sort of went, well, it'll be interesting to learn how to make books, and maybe I can make my own books out of my work. And that class changed my life. You know, I took it, and it was my junior year, and I went, this is what I want to do forever. So I took internships, and I took supplemental classes that I felt could help with that exploration, and finished my BFA, and then I trained with paper makers, I trained with letterpress printers,
sure.
And I trained with bookbinders, but I never, I always felt like I should get my Master's of Fine Arts, but I didn't feel ready. I wanted to come home for a little while and see what happens, so I came home for about 5 years, like I said, after Bahamar,
yeah.
you know, had a little moment there. I left. I thought maybe this is the sign, you know, for me to go and get my master's. And it's been another just great decision, like one of the best decisions I've ever made. It's been so helpful to be trained up at the University of Iowa Center for the Book. They are so, it's like a family there. They're so wonderful, and they're so hardcore with their training that I know now when I come back again, because that's my plan. I have one more year.
Okay.
I will... I'll be bringing like the best that I have to offer, because before I was like, I love this thing, but I'm still figuring it out and I'm still trying to navigate it. And I,
but with that additional training,
yeah,
it's
with additional training, it's helpful. Yeah. So it's just been a craft that I've always loved, because I think as a writer, I'm interested in figuring out how best to present my words in the codex form, in the book form. And, I'm a control freak, really, at the core, right? Like, a very hardcore control freak.
I think you would have to be a perfectionist to do what it is that you do.
And there are lines for me, you know. There are some, like, in the program, there's a range of us with all different kinds of interests. For
sure.
me, I handset my type, and that, and by that I mean, you know, a true and exact history.
Mm-hmm.
All of those words, every single letter and every single piece of punctuation and every space is a tiny piece of lead that you string together to form a line and another line, and then you print that by hand. So that's like quite a type of insanity, right? Meanwhile...
But it also speaks to this notion of true and exact.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
when we come back in the next segment, we're going to be introduced to two other artists, both of whom are also writers.
Yes.
And I'm going to introduce them in the next segment, and we're going to get a chance to talk a little bit more about and explore a bit more specifically around a true and exact history.
Yeah.
But you are listening to Sonia Farmer, and so I know all of this sounds super interesting, and it's only even going to get more interesting in the next segment, and then we're going to get a chance to talk even more with Sonia when we're back. But she is here with us tonight on Blank Canvas. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Just remember that you can always take us with you if you're on the go, www.guardiantalkradio.com, and stream us live. And you can also go to the App Store or Play Store and download TuneIn Radio to listen to us. So we will see you. I say that every time I guest host this. I say, always see you after the break. I'm on the radio. Nobody can see me. Back shortly.